Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Between Players. My name is Zach. I am usually player number one, and usually on the show, I have a second player who is a friend of mine or an acquaintance or maybe somebody that I worship that has a really great understanding and appreciation of games. But today, I'm going to be talking about something that I think not a lot of people have an easy time saying. When you experience a moment when a game doesn't meet your expectations, or, and this can be true in any kind of media, when an artist comes back and makes something that you weren't really, you're no longer desiring, like the joy or anticipation you had about a title had suddenly left, you know what I mean? And you're left with this, now you've got this piece of art that plays off of all of the things that you liked as a kid or as a younger player, but now you're older and you're like, I don't know if I really need this. I don't know if I really care about this. The end of 2016, or really the last quarter of 2016, gave us tons and tons of games. Mostly the games we were kind of expecting, like the new Final Fantasy, but many of the games we weren't really expecting or we didn't know we really wanted. And I'm sort of talking about Fumito Ueda's semi-anticipated but final chapter, The Last Guardian. Now, if you've never played a Fumito Ueda game before, that means that you probably weren't a PS2 owner. If you were a PS2 owner, then you would have experienced much of his work, which were two other games. They were Ico, which was a labyrinthian action platforming game where you play the role of Ico, a small boy who's been sort of banished to this castle and decides to help free this young princess-like character. And then the other game was The Shadow of the Colossus, in which you play a young prince who sort of banishes himself to try to revive his dying girlfriend or fiance, the woman he loves. And to do this, he would have to travel across this barren and mostly empty landscape, or what could be considered maybe as a limbo of sorts, and kill these monsters who inhabit the world. There are a lot of gameplay aspects that overlap between Fumito Ueda's previous games and this one. There's a lot of aesthetic design choices. There are a lot of moments and set pieces that are fairly reminiscent. And one thing that he does really, really well is atmosphere. He has an incredible control over the landscape. He has an excellent touch. Everything from the mumbled fake Japanese languages that represent a sort of like a proto-Asian cultural language, perhaps similar to Ainu. Their cultural dress, if you've ever watched a Miyazaki film like Princess Mononoke, there are a lot of visual aspects that are very similar. There's people wearing tunics, they wear swords, they carry spears, like a kind of post-Bronze Age Asian aesthetic. And it's a great aesthetic. It's really captivating. And the other thing he does really well is engage your emotions. As when you're playing Ico, or when you're playing with The Shadow of the Colossus, you feel these weird pangs of regret as you climb these stone giants in The Shadow of the Colossus and dive your sword into their weak, weak exposed points and kill them one at a time. Or as Ico, you feel pains as Yorda gets caught by shadow monsters, or, you know, several other scenarios that give you an emotional bond between you and your ward. And in The Last Guardian, there is a similar principle, except for now that is sort of the primary gameplay mechanic. You are a young boy who is sort of marooned or appears to be trapped inside of this labyrinthian castle, and you're trying to find your way out with the help of this cat, griffin, dog creature, Trico. Trico appears to be a very friendly and sort of a naughty AI, basically. He chooses very often when he wants to obey you and when he wants to respond to commands, which leads into something that I'll talk about a little bit later, and that is player agency and control. In some games, when we want to, or when the game developers want to introduce this idea that they're not actually in control of their character, they'll do it by manipulating the story. you still have to play out as those characters, but the story itself does something to strip that agency away from you. A fine example of this is, of course, in The Last of This, and if you, or the, excuse me, The Last of Us, the Naughty Dog game, which was featured on the PS3 and was later remastered on the PS4. Through the entirety of the game, you play as, well, not the entirety, but for the majority of the game, you play through the eyes of Joel, a sort of empathetic character who's lost his daughter and is in, caught in this sort of like The Road-esque fallout in the future. And there's this, you know, awful zombie-ish outbreak infection, let's say, that is ruining society. And the little girl who is your ward, you feel a sort of protectoral role around it. And all the acts of violence that you and sometimes her commit or participate in are all going towards this greater good that Joel is protecting her. But at some point in the game, that notion gets turned around. And I don't want to talk about it too much because I want to talk about The Last Guardian. But that same concept is in The Last Guardian in the sense that the AI is on your side, but very often is playing against you to some degree. You are issuing commands, but for some reason, Trico decides that now is a better time for him to scratch his neck or go explore some area of this level that is more interesting to him. And the thing that became very frustrating to me early on was the fact that I don't so much mind that the AI had a personality or seemed to have a personality in its obstinance, but it became very difficult to discern the moments when Trico's AI was motioning for me to be attentive to something and was just blatantly sort of wasting my time. And that's sort of a frustrating thing. It's not that I have any problem with obviously I was going to spend the time to play the game. A friend of mine very graciously allowed me to borrow it from him so that I could complete it because I was sort of on the fence about purchasing it. This leads to another idea that I had, which was simply that even though this game was long in development, it was a decade, much like Duke Nukem Forever, I had no real intention of playing it after a certain point in time. The desire, the sort of nostalgic urge wasn't there for me. I saw it, it looked interesting, the artwork looked beautiful, but the aspects of it that would have been completely captivating and an easy sell for me at a younger age had suddenly diminished. And I still appreciate all of the things that are about it. Like I said earlier, or maybe I'm just reiterating something that I said before, there are plenty of moments in the game that are really captivating and really honest, and you feel like you're a part of the world that you're supposed to be in. And I felt, you know, my pains of frustration and sadness when trying to navigate Trico through certain devious traps and enemy encounters that I was having a difficult time with. But most of the time, this agency that Trico takes on actually works against you. And this is the part in the game where I started to lose the empathy for Trico. Trico, to me, is a really great possibility for a character. I like the concept of him, but I really don't like his execution. I touched on it a little bit before when I was talking about controls, whether or not Trico was trying to lead my attention somewhere and was sort of being obstinate because he wanted me to see something, to experience something with him. But most of the time, it was Trico just wasn't obeying my commands, or the controls are so lopsided sometimes that when you issue a command to Trico, he's going to react, but there's going to be this like strange delay or something about his motion is going to shake you. I can't tell you the number of times in an encounter with enemies where I would miss a jump or a catch or something that was supposed to be sort of this like cinematic moment, and it was simply because I issued the command and Trico allowed me to fall to my doom, which doesn't like really reinforce the primary ethos of the game, in my opinion, which is that we, Trico and I, are on a journey together. So as far as expectations go and sort of a desire, I kind of came into it not really wanting to experience The Last Guardian, if you get my meaning. It wasn't that I didn't like the idea of it or I didn't like Fumito's other work. I absolutely adore Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. And I, you know, having not played them very recently, I don't know if they would hold up to today's design aesthetic, but there are so many moments in The Last Guardian where I thought, this could have been tighter, this area could have been shorter, these controls could have been smoother. There were all these mechanical things that prevented me from fully engaging with Trico as my friend, as my partner, as the sort of, you know, gleefully Falcorian spirit mate on this wild journey through a giant labyrinth made out of stone in which I am a small boy who is trapped inside of. Even up into the resolution of the game, and if this is your first time hearing about The Last Guardian, I'm sorry, I'm about to, like, give all the things away, but here we go. At the end, you find that the boy is a part of a great cycle, and that cycle involves this sort of spirit energy monster. We'll call it a monster, but we'll just say, like, a spirit essence that's at the core of this place that he's trapped inside of. And that spirit energy doesn't really have any form. It doesn't appear to have any motive. It's just like an engine. The engine calls these cat-like creatures to cat griffins to go out and collect kids that they then sort of collect them by eating them, but not eating them, just sort of like swallowing them and then puking them into this chute. And the chute converts the kids, I think, into energy, and it spits back out a barrel that the cat griffins ingest and get their energy from. And at no point was any aspect of this explained, and I wasn't really looking for an explanation, but there were some inconsistencies even with that that I found really frustrating. And firstly is that Trico himself uses a bunch of skills that none of the other cat, guardian, griffin things that you encounter ever use, namely his, like, laser tail weapon. This is an object that they created so that you could get through certain obstacles in the game, and it is only appears to work for him, and, like, none of the other cat guardian griffins ever react when I use my mirror shield to target something and blast away at it. It was also abundantly unclear to me what the trigger was for the creature to no longer want to eat me. Once the mask sort of falls away on Trico in the beginning of the game, he kind of calms down, and after you wrestle a couple of spears out of his side and feed him a couple of barrels, he's suddenly your best friend. Well, you're not your worst enemy. However, the other cat griffins you encounter don't operate this way. They still have their cowls on, they're under the control of whatever the energy is that is in the center of this labyrinth, and they just act in accordance with their own interests, it appears, or the interests of that energy field. So as far as elements go, it was really difficult to feel empathy at some point, somewhat because I hadn't felt like they had established Trico as a real partner, mainly because the AI and the actual mechanical controls fought me so much, but also because it didn't seem reasonable or understandable why the energy creature in the middle of this fortress wants to kidnap kids. Why can't it consume some other object? But I suppose without, you know, all that explanation or what have you, you wouldn't really have a game, right? There'd be no mystery, no black box for us to unravel. And, you know, for the most part, I think the wrap-up of the game was pretty fascinating. They lean very heavily on the end of this idea that you had affected one of the other creatures. And I think that's a cool concept. If I was to level any major criticism at it, though, is just the bugginess and some of the level designs and some of the sort of cinematic moments really blocked me from fully engaging with it. And for that, I would say that this game, for me personally, essentially gets 1 star. And my rating scale is a 0 to 3. And what that means is 0, like, don't touch it. 1, it's got a lot of interesting ideas, but, you know, kind of on the fence as to whether to recommend to actually purchase it. 2 is there's a lot of cool stuff here, but it's not the greatest thing on the planet. And 3 is Mass Effect 2. So now you understand kind of contextually what I mean when I say I think this is a 1-star game. It's worth playing through for some aspects of the experience. However, I can't really in good conscience recommend it at full price because there are so many what I would consider mechanical errors with it. Now, that all being said, if I hadn't played it, I wouldn't have known what 10 years of development with Fumito Ueda looks like. And that is you know, kind of an interesting mystery all in and of itself, and I'm glad I reached that point. So thank you very much to Josh for letting me snatch his copy of it and bust all the way down through it. Now, if I was to give one little idea or something back to Mr. Ueda, it would be this. I think you should go work at Studio Ghibli. You clearly have great control over pacing, over aesthetic. You have a high concept that's really imaginative, but spacious enough to where other people could fill things in for you or help you give articulation to it without it going sideways. So you've created a great world that I think a lot of people would love to adventure inside of. And your character design and some of the other aspects of the game, I think, fit very naturally with their own design ethos. So, you know, if you're listening to this, and you probably aren't, but if you ever do, I think you should sit down and talk to Studio Ghibli and perhaps take a chance on being a director of an animated movie, because throughout playing the game, I kept having this impression that I was supposed to be watching a movie with some interactive moments. It's very, very cinematic. It's very broad. There's a narrative, a narrator, who speaks over top a lot of moments in the game, and that's something that was not in any of his other games, which did have like dialogue cues and things like that. But this narrator character, the person who's speaking to you that you are also playing, is a real full character. Like, he is telling you about his experiences as a young person, and I think it would be a great opportunity for Mr. Ueda to take this sort of style that he has developed over his, you know, 20 odd years with Sony and build that into some really cool animated pieces. And that's my piece. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoy it. If you have any ideas or criticisms or suggestions, just drop me an email at howdy@betweenplayers.com. You can follow me on Twitter. It's just @betweenplayers. And until next time, thank you.